This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. I am super excited about tonight's guest. This is one of the most requested guests we've ever had. Steve, do you want to do the honors?
Yeah, we have the anabolic doc. So I'm curious, we're talking pre-show, about a little bit about you. Introduce yourself to our members who want to know more about you.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thank you so much. Wow. Well, I don't know, anabolic doc. Dr. Thomas O'Connor, metabolic doc, also too. I started off as the anabolic doc writing for Muscular Development Magazine in 2009. So coming up on 10 years next spring, next summer, I guess. And I'm essentially an internal medicine physician, board certified internal medicine. I do teach in the primary care program at University of Connecticut School of Medicine. So I always kind of hold on to my basic tenants, if you will. And so I'm an old GP. I'm just a general practicing physician. But probably 15 years ago when I was training, if you read my book, you read the back of the book with the basics. I myself did some steroids way back in the day, a little bit, but really not too much. I was kind of scared about the whole thing. And essentially, men started coming to me because I was a bit, you know, power lifter. I benched over 500 pounds in competition. I actually technically benched at 198, when I was 47 in competition, I benched 505 pounds.
Wow, that's very impressive. Oh, so how are you able to talk so openly about this stuff as a doctor?
I'll tell you exactly how. Because I understand that the American medical community is a good community, and they're quite progressive, and they want to help take care of people and heal people, right? You guys agree with that, right?
You would think so, at least, yeah.
So I mean, I feel like they're more after profit, but I hope you're right.
So again, this is my, you know, I don't know, 1,000th interview or something. So I've written the books, I write in all the magazines. So this is not my first rodeo. So everyone asks, man, you're the anabolic doc. How do you do it? How do you have a medical license? Well, you know, how do I do it? Well, we take care of people that drink alcohol, take opioids, people that are transgender, gay, I mean, people that are suffering, and people that smoke cigarettes, people that are obese. Am I right or wrong? So way back when I said, you know, I think there's an underserved group of people that need more medical attention.
And so Dr. O'Connor, one question I have for you, because this is a question that I think every steroid user has, is that a lot of steroid users are scared to tell their doctor that they use steroids because they're worried that their doctor is going to maybe tell their employer, their insurance provider, something like that. By law, I think you have to keep everything that we tell you confidential. Is that correct?
That's complete. So that's not the, again, you guys took me on, so I'm in your face, right? So especially it's about the end of like an 18-hour day for me, so I may really get in your face. That is the biggest bunch of bullshit. That doesn't happen. There's a law, it's called HIPAA. If you've heard of HIPAA. So with medical physicians, there's an incredible confidentiality clause. So none of these doctors, these are my colleagues, right? So these are my colleagues. And we don't hate is gonna hate. We don't wanna hate too much on these people. So the problem with these guys is they don't understand. They don't even know what Anadrol or Anavar is. So that's the perspective. And I've been a broker. I've been a broker from medical physicians that are good and caring, but certainly can have an attitude towards patients on steroids. Absolutely. Or because they don't, you know, as human beings, when we don't understand something, we could technically come off defensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So medical physicians, I've seen this way back when, let's go back, 2003, 1999, 2000, when I was in med school and I was training in New York City and Hartford, Connecticut, some of the best training programs in the world. Inner city, hardcore, drug drugs, AIDS, motor vehicle accidents, shootings, you name it, we get it. So not to mention great medical cases. So I started seeing steroid users, and I saw them having basically heart attacks, atrial fibrillation, suffering when they come off steroids, they were suffering, right? In my book, if you read my book. So I decided to start presenting cases to the medical physicians. Lo and behold, I found out two things. Number one, they don't know what Anadrol is. They don't know what Anavar. They don't even know what testosterone really actually is. Certainly the way it's used within in a steroid community. And I found out number one. Number two, I found out that they were very defensive because they're very bright people. They know a lot of stuff. Come on, these are doctors. They're smart people. They know everything from the textbooks and from the training. If when you're someone you love is dying, you want a good doctor to help you, please, anywhere. So you do. But the truth is they don't know anything about steroids. Overnight, I became the anabolic doc. I wanted to be known as I am today with humility, but I am in your face. That's not humility. I'm humble. The truth is we need to teach the medical community and the community at large, if you're using steroids, what will happen to you medically? I'm not a chiropractor. I'm not anti-aging. Anti-aging is freaking ridiculous. Anti-aging, you don't want to anti-age? Don't have a heart attack. That has nothing to do with steroids, growth hormone, bodybuilding. I'm a power lifter. I bet you were 500 pounds. I get it. You want to be big and strong. You want to walk around as a badass and feel great. It's a high. That can be a psychiatric disease.
So
that's where I started. That's where I started.
So here's my follow-up question on that, because you mentioned like Anadrol. I know like something like Trenbolone or Primobolan, those are actually illegal in the United States. So if someone came to you and said, yeah, I'm taking Trenbolone, blah, 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 you'd still be able to help them even though that Trenbolone is illegal for human use in the United States?
So you guys don't watch, you haven't watched all my videos and read my books, but that's okay.
No.
So Steve, that's okay, buddy. You're with me. I'm in your face. That's which is great. You can cut me off anytime you like. So I'm true to my people. The truth is, so I'm a physician. I see someone in the day. I mean, now all I do is take care of steroid users and I'm an expert in TRT. So that's my day job now. But not long ago, I was a primary care doctor. So if someone comes in, Steve, and they're suffering from cigarette smoking and they have a heart attack, and they smoke cigarettes. And I come in and I smell cigarette smoke on them. Do I push them out of the room?
I would hope not. No, you probably tell them, hey, you should quit smoking.
I do my best because you know what? You can only help people. I love people and I'm a healer. You lead people to the water and you help them drink. You show them they should be. So you don't tell people what to do. Okay, any healer knows this. So another person comes in the room and they're an alcoholic and they quit drinking. They say they went to AA. Maybe they had a car accident. God forbid they hurt someone or themselves. And they're in a 12-step program and they have depression, maybe not. And they quit drinking. And then they fall off the wagon and they drink again. Again, I'm a physician. I smell booze on the breath. Do I tell that person, get the F out of my office?
I would hope not.
Let's keep moving. That's number two. Number three, person is a very unfortunate reality this day and age, and I've been involved in this because I'm a primary care doctor. Opioid use. Ever hear of opioids and narcotics? You know what those are?
Oh, yeah. They're killing a lot of people.
Okay. So yeah. Opioid use. So a guy comes in my office. He's on Suboxone. Maybe he's taking methadone. From a pain clinic, which are, God bless those doctors, I don't do that. And maybe he's taking heroin because he can't get enough and he's suffering. The key word here, guys, is suffering. Do I push that person out of the office? The answer is no. Okay, let's fast forward. Anabolic steroid user comes in on Tren, Anadrol, D-ball, whatever you like. Drugs that actually I teach physicians of what these drugs are and how they're used, which is very interesting, right? So I know this stuff, but the average physician at Harvard has not a clue. Although things are changing.
What about something like equipoise? Like that's a veterinary steroid. So how
But hold on. Let me.
Guys, you finish and then I'll go.
Let me finish. I'm not very good. If you saw my Boston Lloyd interview, I'm not very good at interviews. So, but I don't really care. So the truth is, I'll finish the question. That person is on steroids. I don't give a shit if it's Equipoise, Tren, D-ball, if it's illicit for horses, dogs, and cats, if he's taking a little testosterone or 4 grams of testosterone. Who gives a shit? I'm not going to give it to him. But if he has a heart attack and he's going to commit suicide and feel like crap, I can help him. And I've taught and I'm teaching physicians with my protocols and protocols from other universities. We help people. So if you're on steroids, you may get hurt and you may suffer, correct? So physicians are helping now. Now my day, there won't be 1 week that goes by without me receiving at least 5 calls from a doctor in this country, not to mention outside the country, asking me to help them wean or take care of their patient that's on steroids, because now that doctor is not pushing them out of the room anymore, in part because of my teachings.
Well, we definitely thank you for that. I mean,
no problem.
You're definitely doing a service for the community. My question, Liz, is for something like Equipoise, you know, which is a veterinary steroid that obviously bodybuilders use, how are you able to educate doctors? Because there's obviously no articles you can take off PubMed. There's no literature on it because it's a veterinary steroid.
There's tons of literature on Equipoise.
Well, it's 20 years of human grade, though, Trevor.
There's tons of years.
Are you just looking? Are you just referencing tons, studies then?
Tons of data on Equipoise. But you don't see the deal is this, guys. You don't need, I don't need to have a specific article, but there are many on Anadrol, Equipoise. And we're not just in America, we're over, Europeans are more progressive on this. So in the UK, I work all over the world. So the truth is, guys, when physicians watch my videos on my YouTube channels, read my book, this is not new. I've been doing this for over a decade. Physicians come to me and send me their patients. They trust me. If they have a patient that's suffering from heroin use, they know where to go with that. If they have a patient that's suffering with alcohol abuse, they know where to, or depression, they go with this. I'm now the lead physician helping people suffering with anabolic steroid use and providing young men and women with education and openness for, because, you know, remember the old days, just say no? It doesn't work. So if you're very progressive and you want to help heal people, you educate. I have found that men that are suffering on steroids who come to me, they actually want help. And first of all, most guys come to me they come to me when they have already had suffered a heart attack, even though they're 25 or 28, although that's rare, usually in their 40s. They have congestive heart failure. They feel like crap. They have sexual problems. Forget the hair loss, gynecomastia, the acne. Who cares about that? These guys come to me, kidney failure. Now it's freakish. So as an internist, these are the paradigms, and these are the medical specialties or subspecialties, red blood cells. I mean, this is all I do. I've been focusing on this for over a decade. And physicians, they understand polycythemia. They just don't understand the cultural and the drug doses and how that leads to polycythemia or accelerated hypertension or accelerated atherosclerosis or accelerated coronary disease or accelerated heart failure. But they want to, and these patients, most of them are men, obviously, they're mainly men, and they're not easy to get off steroids because they have anabolic steroid-induced hypogonadism and they have body dysmorphia.
I was going to say yesterday is the 1 year anniversary of Dallas McCarver's death. And we actually had his coach on our podcast yesterday. Do you know about his case? Can you tell us, do you think that steroids caused his issue?
Guys.
Yeah.
This is not about what this is about. Obviously he did a lot of drugs and steroids and he died. And you obviously didn't see my YouTube channel before they took that down when it approached 400,000 views or something. I did Dallas McCarver's autopsy and Rich Piana's autopsy. I read the autopsy as a medical expert. It's obvious that the drug use destroys the organs. It leads to accelerated growth of the ventricles, accelerated plaque growth in the coronary arteries. You guys are not physicians, so you may not understand this. So, and that's just what it caused. But what we're not, we need to step back and look at the big picture that people are using steroids, and men and women. And it's the numbers that the literature has, 8 million, 12 million, that pales. It's upwards of probably 50 to 100 million. And then if you include growth hormone and pro-hormones and other medicines that are really truly medicines that are not regulated. And again, I'm a free guy. I don't work for drug companies. I work for my patients. So the truth is we need to approach this from the medical community and from the community at large of parents and loved ones and even the steroid users themselves, because I understand, I love to be big and strong. Who doesn't understand that? But the truth is, do you understand the medical consequences? And what are the medical consequences? And unfortunately, we are not putting resources into studying this, and that's going to change.
So Dr. Thomas O'Connor, we got a lot of listener questions, so let's start getting into them.
Let's go.
Morris wants to know, how would you reply to someone who tells you performance-enhancing drugs are bad and cannot be used safely?
That simple question, that's the question?
That's a simple, yep.
Performance-enhancing drugs is a general question. There are so many, I can go on for 6 hours. Performance-enhancing drugs, caffeine is a performance-enhancing drug. Are we talking about steroids? Are we talking about SARMs? Are we talking about pro-hormones? Any guys, physics, spiritualism, any medicine has a side effect. Aspirin has a side effect. If you take an agent, first of all, are you cheating? If you're cheating because you sign a contract, because you're an Olympian, don't cheat. If you cheat, you're done. If you're not a cheater and you're a regular guy that I take care of, and you're doing it just to feel jacked up and feel great, like because it's a high, then you're just taking your own health at risk. How much risk? It depends. If you do a little Anavar, are you going to have a heart attack tomorrow? Probably not. If you do Anadrol, probably one tablet 3 times a week. Okay. So the answer to that is there's not a simple answer. Performance-enhancing drugs are varied. There are many. And depending on what that drug is and how those agents work, depending on your medical history, if you're a man that has very bad genetics for early heart disease, if you're a man and your dad had a heart attack in his 40s or 50s, and you're going to use steroids, you're going to have a heart attack before he did, probably. Okay, so this is what I see. So you have to get your head around performance-enhancing drugs. If you're a professional athlete, you're cheating and you're going to lose your contract and maybe more. Okay. And I don't give a shit about that. I don't care about cheating. It's for me, it's about the people, the regular guy who does Anavar and test and wants to walk around and feel, holy shit, I feel phenomenal, bro. Whoa. And he can't stop. And I want him to understand that if you do, not all men do steroids. We're trying to understand who does use steroids. Look at you. I don't think you use steroids.
Me, no, I don't.
You're a model. You're a very good-looking man, and you hold on a minute. Hold on. You ready for this? Because I told you it's going to be a good one. Your ego and your psyche, you're satisfied with how you look. A lot of men are not satisfied for how they look because maybe they're not particularly good-looking. But if they get big and jacked up and they walk into a party or they walk into the gym, guess what? They feel like they're someone.
I'm actually a former professional bodybuilder. I was the most depressed I ever was when I was bodybuilding because my entire self-worth was based on what I saw in the mirror.
Not good. Not good. But understand what's going on, Trevor. The world is social media now. Everything, we're all superficial. Well, superficiality has been put on steroids because of social media. I'm sure you agree.
It's part of it. Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you post a photo on Instagram or whatever, and people are liking and they're commenting on it, you get the same endorphin release that you do when you win money gambling, when you get an A on a test. It's this exact same endorphin release. It gets addictive for sure. I mean, like, I'm not one of those people who love social media, but even me, I look and I'll be like, whoa, that photo got 400 likes, you know, and it makes you feel popular or whatever.
You see the photos on Instagram that get that 13,000. And of course I know a lot of these people, 3,000, 30,000 views. They're amazing. They're incredible. And they're, if my Instagram is mainly people on steroids and fitness related, right? That's just what my Instagram is. And again, I'm new. I started doing Instagram about a year ago, and I don't do it. I don't run it. I have my IT and my web people. I mean, I'm just the doc. So I have other people doing this, and I did this because, you know, we have to reach more people. So the truth is, people do get high on certain on feedback. So performance enhancing drugs are not just to perform better; they make you high. The problem is, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I've seen this clinically and emotionally, and it's over every aspect of business and world that love, everything is true. So in the end, being spiritual and being easy and trying to minimize and stay and keep your life very balanced, for most of us, including myself when I was younger, it's not easy to do. So people use these drugs. They work these are miracle drugs. Anavar, Anadrol, obviously some people respond. I did a whole, this morning I was with Ron Harris. We talked about testosterone resistance. Check out that tomorrow morning. We talked about that. You know, resistance, why men are resistant to steroids when some respond much more. Wow. So I know a lot about that because I hear that from my patients. So the truth is, performance enhancing drugs, they're here. They're varied. And what if your grandmother, what if your mother, what if an elderly person who has weak muscles can use one of these drugs and walk up the stairs and live at home instead of going to a nursing home? Is that bad?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
We need to, as a community, as a world, as human beings, we need to research and we need to put more of our resources into studying this. Unfortunately, because of steroids, we're going to look back at this 100 years from now and laugh at this and say, how stupid were we? The politicized, it's so politicized because of Major League Baseball.
Do you want to know something heartbreaking, Dr. O'Connor? So I'm doing my thesis in cardiovascular health. And basically what I'm studying is that we know diet intervention works. We know exercise works. The problem is people aren't doing it. Right. Sure. So comes the doctor, they got high blood pressure, poor cholesterol. The doctor says, you know, start exercising, start eating better. That guy comes back 2 years later. He hasn't done any of it. Doctor then writes him a blood pressure medication, whatever. Right. So what I want to study and what I am studying is dietary supplements as a natural alternative. Can these be just as effective as prescription, you know, cholesterol medication, blood pressure medication, things like that? The amount of flack I am getting from human ethics, the amount of people are claiming bias, it's depressing that I want to study something that could potentially really help people, you know, help the community at large, and I've gotten nothing but criticism. People are saying like I'm a sellout because I'm doing an industry funded study. It's breaking my heart when I just want to help people and give them a natural alternative to, you know, prescription drugs.
So obviously, Trevor, you're fighting against, you know, people are going to say big pharma, but also physicians. And the truth of the matter is red yeast rice is never going to be as strong as atorvastatin. Do you know what I'm talking? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I agree with you. It won't be as strong, but can it, for someone who's not, so like if someone has horrible, horrible levels and they're, you know, like, they're like a basket case, yeah, they're going to need some prescription. But for that, you know, gray area person where their levels are bad, but they're not horrible. That's what I want to study. Can I help that person?
Those are generic medicines and I have no conflicts. I don't get any money. There's no money. You could look and you could check me out every which way to Sunday. The truth is is that I believe you and I agree with you. You're talking, Trevor, about behavior modification. This country is morbidly obese. This country is so sad. And how do you do it? How do I do it? How do you do it? You are lucky. I'm lucky. Some people have bad genetics for metabolism. Most people, if you Gaussian curve it, have average genetics, and that we eat too many carbohydrates. I know you agree. Steve's going to agree. Who's not going to agree with me? We're not active. That's a drug. Carbohydrates are a drug. And you better believe it, Frito-Lays is being shoved down our throat. I'm with you. I'm on your side. We need to love people and show people there's an alternative way to change their behavior. I actually have patients. I do medically supervised weight loss. I do it. I'm a physician. And you know what my most powerful agent is? Me getting in their face. I find, and these are mainly men, they're all men mainly. And I find my way into their brain. I love them. I care for them. I do a history and physical exam. We do incredible detailed laboratory analysis, coronary artery calcium scores, echocardiography. We do it all. I work with other physicians, endocrinology, thyroid. We do it all. And then when I find out that the patient has really nothing I could change and work on, you know what the problem is, Steve and Trevor? It's their behavior. And this country is, we're locked in and we're diseased on food. It's true. You guys both agree. So those supplements can definitely help. There's no question. Red yeast, rice, amino acids, and we can go on forever. Fish oils, CoQ10. I love that stuff. I love it. I agree. But the main problem is behavior.
Sam Grave wants to know, how is your pec tear doing?
Thank you so much, sweetheart. Thank you. It's healing. It's almost 3 weeks tomorrow. Oh boy. It's been brutal because, you know, I went from so fast, moving so fast to this. I'm healing up and I'm looking forward to get back and I'm thinking every day. So thank you so much for asking that.
B Biggs asks, what are your thoughts on triptorelin, which is GnRH, for PCT, and does it have any place in a cycle or post-cycle therapy?
So I've been involved in some of these different, you know, some of these stimulator drugs and growth hormone releasing peptides and all this kind of stuff. And forgive me for the proper terminology. You know, they work, guys. This stuff works. So using agents to stimulate your own growth hormone, GHRP, you know, there's a variety of them, and there's peptides. These things, they do work. They do work. And it's sad to say that when it comes to these medicines and, well, near medicines and unidentified medicines and SARMs, you know, you have stimulating agents and then you have the SARMs. And you know what's going to happen with Orrin Hatch out there? The big pharma is going to get they're going to get patents on this stuff. And then it's going to take another 5 or 10 years, if not more. These agents will be coming out. And unfortunately, it's going to be pathetic because they're going to cost $15,000 a year. But, you know, the beauty is that there is this underground, and I got to be careful with that. I mean, but it's unregulated, and there's no, guys, the amount of research, progressive, real studies that are double-blinded, peer-reviewed, that are well done, and I agree you can't trust people, you can't trust big pharma. They're out there to make money on us. So, but are these drugs useful? Yes, they are. They do work. But understanding the mechanisms specifically on individual people before a cycle, during a cycle, after, I see it all day long. So the answer is they can help. They definitely can work. But I do see side effects on some of the GHRP. I see some of these medications that people end up having palpitations, nausea, vomiting. It is true. And if you read it on the Bro Science blogs, you'll see the stuff that's pretty true, that, you know, some of the stuff is that has some horrible side effects, you know, and the kids are using it because they think it's an alternative to steroids. And the truth is there's no data. We don't know. It's all experimental.
I have a question about the SARMs. You said 10 to 15 years from now, the ones that are in clinical testing right now will actually be FDA approved, you think?
Are you kidding me?
But they're going to be super expensive. What about the ones that were like cargarine, which isn't actually a SARM, it's a PPAR agonist, but like S4, cargarine, those which were are no longer being in clinical testing. Do you have any idea why? And those are still being sold underground. Why? Do you have any idea why those were stopped, but some of these other ones are still in clinical testing?
All I can tell you is, I mean, I'm so busy with my day job, which is dealing with just garden variety steroid disease related issues, blood pressure, cholesterol, enlarged hearts, heart attacks, erectile dysfunction. I mean, my basic day, I'm just like a regular doctor now. So, but of course, an expert on steroids, just garden variety. So if you look back at Ostarin, again, I'm just peeling this out of my brain. I didn't prepare for this. Ostarin, 15 years ago or 10 years ago at least, was a Canadian company that was making what? That's Ostarin, right? It's a SARM, correct?
It's correct. Ostarin is a SARM, yes.
Okay, so if you look for that, it was a Canadian company. I remember researching this, I don't know, when I was writing in Muscular, 2010, and I saw men using it back then, and they were using it as an alternative to steroids. Hey, doc, I'm on Ostarin 25 milligrams. I believe it was 25 milligrams. And they were like, let me see, let me run, and I'm getting ready for a power. These are mostly powerlifters, because I take care of really more powerlifters than strongmen, because that's who I am. So bodybuilders don't really come to me too much, because insulin, and I just don't, I mean, you know, it's a kind of a conflict, I guess. So big strong men come to me, they're worried for blood, they're worried for having a heart attack. So the guys come, hey doc, you know what, I'm getting ready to do a meet. Instead of increasing test and doing Anadrol or D-ball, I'm using this SARM. Hey doc, can we check? I'm not telling, again, your first question, I tell him stop doing it. But he understands, I love him, I care for him, and I'm being very conservative. I say, stop doing it. Doc, let's check my labs. So I check his labs. And how do his labs look? They look like crap. His HDL, it looks like he's on Anavar, Anadrol. His LFTs are elevated. So again, the question is, just like the study out of Harvard in New York Times that I was quoted a few months ago, half the SARMs you get are not even SARMs. They could be anything. And actually they can be, if the guy selling it wants to get a resale, he's gonna put in a little generic, a little Anavar or D-ball, probably D-ball, it's cheaper. And the guy's gonna get a good bang for the buck. He doesn't give a shit if it's really a SARM and he's gonna get a bump in his LFTs, or his HDL is going to go down, or if he has hypertension or his left ventricle grows, they could care less. It's all about making money.
We're actually seeing clenbuterol being put in a lot of these SARMs being sold. That's probably what's going to cause the heart issues for sure.
True.
So yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So when I checked these, when I initially published some of my raw data and my clinical, all in Muscular Development, just writing on my own since 2005, 2006, when I opened my practice out of residency training, I was actually doing things when I was a resident doctor at UConn. Hey, everyone knows I do this. State of Connecticut knows, everyone knows. I don't give steroids. I take them in and I see if I can help them. So that's a response to your first answer. How do I deal with these guys? Well, some doctors deal with heroin users. They're not losing their license. I deal with medical steroid users and I love them and I care for them and I treat their blood pressure. I try to wean them off, because now we have weaning protocols. Now, I was doing this before there were weaning protocols. So, and again, it's just, I've been around for a long time. I knew what I was doing was right. It was ethical. I knew that if a mother brought her son to me, I knew I was doing the right thing.
So doctor, on that note, 95% of our listeners are just average Joes that like to lift weights, gym rats, you know, and they use steroids. Let's be honest. Most of them use steroids. So they're probably listening to this and they're kind of like, whoa, this is kind of, you know, scary what this doctor is saying. But can you kind of, you know,
what's scary?
Well, what you said at the beginning about, like, so many people are coming to you, it's the heart issues and the liver issues and the kidney issues and stuff. But can you kind of, like, tell us what are the couple things that you see a lot from the normal gym rats that are using maybe a moderate amount of steroids or a conservative amount of steroids. Okay. And what do you do to kind of help them?
Great question. Number one, when men use steroids long enough, despite PCT, they can't get off steroids and the libido is wrecked. Number one, what a great question, Steve. Number one, what I see, these guys don't come, Steve and Trevor, these guys don't come to me because they care about their hearts. They come to me because they can't get off steroids or pro-hormones because their sex is horrible, they feel like garbage, and now we check their testosterone and it's very low. Anabolic steroid-induced hypogonadism. Are you aware of this medical condition?
Oh yeah, we see it all the time. How long will that be, in your experience, can that be caused by just one 12-week cycle, or is that something where they go like 2 years off and on steroids and then their HPTA is fucked for the rest of their life? What have you seen in terms of that?
Great question, Steve. I have all the data and I'm holding it. It's raw data, because no one has the data that I have. I've seen thousands and I have all the data in my office. So if I have to make an average, you know, have I seen a man that's done one cycle and he says that his libido is completely tanked 6 months, a year later, his life is destroyed now? I've seen them. Is that common? No, it's not common. The common man is a young man and he's like a freight train. He could take multiple cycles and he laughs it off. He doesn't even need PCT. He doesn't even know what it is and he's not gonna waste his money on it, not to mention the injections. He's not gonna take the SARM, the Clomid, the HC, he's not gonna do it. Most guys, the average guy doesn't do it. The pro guy, the very complicated guys, they do their best to do it. And then in the end of the day, after, I don't know, years of steroids, let's just say a year, 18 months, two or three good cycles. But you know what happens now, guys? No one's coming off.
It's true.
They don't come off anymore, guys. I'm not sure you're aware of that. No one's coming off.
Do you want to know why all the heart attacks are happening?
Yeah, I know why, but go ahead. What's your take on it?
Steroids decrease collagen synthesis in the body. Now, when people think collagen, they think hair, skin, nails, teeth, bones. That's all right. But what people don't realize is your entire cardiovascular system is also made of collagen. Now, the body is designed to heal. So in the 80s, when guys were doing, you know, a 16-week cycle, then coming off for 16 weeks, they would totally destroy their cardiovascular health, but then their body would recover, and then they would destroy it again, and then their body would recover. But now the problem that guys are not coming off, they're basically absolutely destroying their entire cardiovascular system, and then it's just a matter of time before they get a heart attack or stroke or something like that.
Interesting. Now, I'm an expert in this, and I'd have to say, where's the data for that? I understand what you're saying. I mean, if you understand the mechanism of action for atherogenesis and the plaque formation, I mean, we could do a whole talk on this, but I'm not sure I have the time for this. But I'm not sure that the lipid experts and the cardiac experts, the PhD guys, not the MD guys that have a axe to grind, I'm not sure that they're going to agree with that. But I think hearing that from you, it is interesting because I see a lot of aneurysms. Is it from hypertension? Do they have weak, those adventitia of those huge arteries, the aortic artery, not to mention the baby coronary arteries and those nephron arteries, the endothelial tissue. And if you understand this, which I'm sure you do, I mean, it's a multifactorial process, Trevor. I see it as a multifactor. I see it as dyslipidemia, abnormalities in lipid, super low HDL, increase LDL, depending on what you're doing, Anadrol, your genetics, how fat you are, your diet, hypertension, and there's other hypercoagulable factors, not to mention the polycythemia. Now, do you understand what I'm talking about? This is no one has a silver bullet on this. I don't, but I like that. I don't enjoy that. I love to hear, that makes me think very interesting, and I also think of how these guys have all these, you know, pec tears, not to mention I'm 53 years old. I guess I'm allowed to have one. you know, bicep tears, these accelerated injuries, and you think of the soft tissue and you think of and I've seen all sorts of neuropathies. I've seen bizarre neuropathies and myopathies of the skeletal muscle. We talked about it today with Ron, because anabolic steroids definitely cause abnormal skeletal muscle growth.
But Dr. O'Connor, let's off air, hook me up with Ron and I'll do an hour episode on just that. And that's I've got references to cite everything.
Well, what we'll do is I'll have you come on the show. We'll have a threesome like this. We'll just do three of us on the show.
Be careful when you say let's have a threesome.
That doesn't sound good. That sounds bad.
Yeah, that's true. One thing I really want to cover, because we had a lot of listener questions on this, we don't have much time, is testosterone replacement therapy. It seems like everyone wants to get on testosterone replacement therapy. Me and Steve, we see on the forums all the time. I mean, guys that are like 25 are blasting and cruising.
Yeah.
Who in your opinion should actually get on testosterone replacement therapy? And then what is testosterone replacement therapy? You know, we see dosages from 100 milligrams of test per week to like a gram of test per week, and guys are all calling it blasting and cruising testosterone replacement therapy.
So I did a video on blast and cruise. So, I mean, this is a great question. Let's just move. This would be like, you know, like one of these like turret, like, you know, speed dating. Just hit me with the stuff. Okay. Guys are in testosterone. Men who need testosterone, in my medical practice, you don't get testosterone unless you need it. So obviously the majority of guys come to me, they've already destabilized their testosterone because they've been steroid using. Other guys, I do actually have regular guys that are my age or older, younger, and they have low T from organic causes. What's an organic cause? Usually metabolic, diabetes or pre-diabetes. They have to have low T, they have to be suffering, they have to have bad libidos and mood and being exhausted. And then you have to review everything, guys, and you have to find reversible medical causes that you can reverse first. And then you have to be honest and say, sir, when you go back, when I put you on this testosterone, me or any other physician, or you do it yourself, do you understand the consequences? And the number one consequence is you'll be on it forever, because whatever your level is now, good, say goodbye to that. And that's despite using little baby doses of HCG with anti-aging. The truth is, when a man's on testosterone long enough, even little small doses for TRT, let's fast forward for a year or two, three, 4 years later, he's on testosterone forever. Welcome to the club. And when I tell that to steroid naive men that are, say, because I take care of regular guys too. I'm an expert in TRT, but I have to vet someone. Most guys come to me because, yes, they're disabled and they have steroid-related medical issues, either acutely or they're off steroids, and they're like, doc, see the white flag? Here's my white flag. Doc, I'm done. My T's not coming back. I feel like shit. Can you evaluate me? And that's my day job. So testosterone, you got to be careful. Don't take testosterone. Don't take it unless you need it. Because if you take it, you're going to need it. You're going to be on it forever. If that turns you off, don't do it, man, if you're 25. How many 25-year-olds have low T? It's negligible. Negligible. Can they congenital issues? It's rare. Super rare. If they're on Suboxone, if they have corticosteroids because they're on prednisone for some other reason, we see all this. Most of them, when they're a young man who's under the age of 50 or 40 who has low T, is either very heavy and has obesity and has diabetes or prediabetes, metabolic, that's low T, or he's been taking steroids. I don't discriminate. In the end of the day, I vet him. He needs to be evaluated. And then at the end of the day, you give him a trial of testosterone, and then they cross the line into, say, 6 months or a year. And then how do they do? And if they say, doc, I feel so good. And then I manage, they come under the wing. This is what I tell everyone. I'm never going to stop. This is what I do. And then I manage the cardiac consequences, Trevor. And that's a good, boy, my discoveries. Then I manage the cardiac consequences. Do you know that the federal government, and we don't want to launch off in this too bad, the federal government in 2015, they put an increase, almost a black box, an increased warning at testosterone for TRT. Forget steroids, saying it will increase heart attack, stroke, and death. The truth is, that's not true. It's not true. The data was very poor, and they jumped on that for political reasons.
Tell us again, our 95% of listeners that do use a conservative or moderate amount of steroids, maybe, you know, 500 milligrams a week a test, whatever, for a normal 12-week cycle, that are listening to this, what do they need to check on right now if they've been using steroids for like a couple of years or 5 years? Should they be checking their cholesterol like a hawk? Should they be checking what kind of data should they be looking into to make sure that they're still healthy? And should they, you know, if they do find whatever you're going to say, what can they do to kind of help themselves?
Great question. The best question there is, because if we're helping people, we have to lead people somewhere for the truth. They don't want to die. They don't want to get hurt. No one wants to get hurt. Who gets hurt? They need to see a physician. I feel a physician, an internist. Obviously, it doesn't have to be me. It could be a smart doctor who's an internist. It could be a nurse practitioner. It could be an APRN, a mid-level practitioner in this country or outside the world. And they need to do a history, Steve, a history. If you have a history of kidney disease in your family or heart disease, and you're on steroids and your cholesterol, yes, cholesterol, a CBC, a comprehensive metabolic panel, a urinalysis, a prostate, please. These are the things I will openly always tell these things for free. It's very simple for a good physician to evaluate a person for disease. Coronary artery calcium scores. If you're 35 or 40 and you're a man, and you're a man that is concerned because you have family history for early coronary artery disease, premature coronary, get a coronary. This is all I do all day long. I actually have a whole basic, you call it an executive physical. I have a basic evaluation that's super complicated, super, super intense, and every man runs through it. And then I tease out and pick, you know what? Not every guy has the same risks. So if you're on testosterone, the cardiac, and Trevor knows this, the cardiac disease just on testosterone, and the answer from before, 500 a week, the average dose of testosterone, cypionate of esters, you got to go with what, 100? It's from 75, 50, 100 every 3 days up to, no one wants to take testosterone esters every 2 weeks. That's ridiculous because it goes like this. And unfortunately, doctors don't understand that. And they don't want to agree to that. If they just say, get the hell out of here. But the anti-aging guys have been very good for this. And they give these little small doses. So they try to keep it regular. You know, so the truth is, you know, small doses, and watch your vital signs, blood pressure, cholesterol. And then, of course, there's the diabetes. But not many men on testosterone that are somewhat lean and have muscle tissue, they're usually not diabetic and pre-diabetic like the rest of the people in this country, because they're probably trying to stay in the gym. You know, interesting, steroids, one of the good things, it makes you go to the gym, Doc. And that is true. I mean, it does make you go to the gym. You know, I'm trying to research this. So I hope I answered your question on that.
Whether you're actually working out or just taking beast mode selfies, though, that's another question.
That's true. I don't go to commercial gyms. I have little lifting clubs I go to.
One another thing that I really encourage people to do, and it's slowly catching on here in North America, but it's very popular in Europe, is a Meridian DPA machine, Meridian Dual Pulse Wave Analysis machine. It's a fascinating piece of equipment, and what it does is it basically tests the elasticity of your arteries. Because the problem is that cholesterol, blood pressure, it doesn't actually test artery health. And that's what this machine does. It's not that expensive of a machine. Like, the machine is only $10,000. Like, most doctors' clinics in Europe have one. It's just something, I don't know what it is about North America. We're just very slow to catch on. I mean, if there's this new machine that people are talking about in Europe, a doctor would be like, yeah, let's buy one. I want one for my clinic. But here in North America, it takes like 30 years. I don't get it.
You are right. And that is, I agree with you, by the way. You're a smart guy. I'm an endothelialist. You are too. We are endothelialists, aren't we, Trevor? So the elasticity, this is, in the end of the day, when you lose elasticity from years of damage, blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, smoking, genetics, so on and so forth, when you lose elasticity in the endothelial region, not to mention in the media, you become, you have vascular disease. you are correct. So is blood pressure a surrogate marker? Yes. Should we check the elasticity and the function of the endothelial tissue? Absolutely. And you know what? I'm about to buy one of those machines for my office, probably in Florida, not to mention maybe in Connecticut. I just have so many men on steroids in Florida, it's overwhelming.
So this is my, I have one more question. I'll let Trevor finish up the show or ask this question. With kidney, because we haven't discussed kidney very much. I noticed, like with me, for the past 20 years, I haven't been using steroids for 20 years, but I noticed whenever I get my blood work done, my BUN, I guess it's called Boone, and my creatinine levels are usually elevated. And I'm under the impression that's could be two reasons. Number one, a high protein diet, which I don't actually consume right now, but also from working out frequently, breaking down muscle, repairing muscle. Am I correct in saying that? Or do I have kidney disease for the past 20 years?
I could talk for 3 hours on this. Let me try to make it simple.
Sure.
Oh, this is my day job, right? So this is one of my most common reasons why men come to me, elevated BUN and creatinine. So the blood urea nights, so this is a basic metabolic profile or a basic metabolic profile with creatinine and blood urea. It's blood urea nitrogen, BUN. So when a man takes in an excessive amount for his nephron mass, which is not necessarily dangerous, protein, he deaminates it, and you're going to see an elevated BUN. That's not disease. That's because you're taking protein. Now, if you're taking creatine monohydrate in, that's going to relate to the lower number, which is the creatinine level. So, but then if you look at men and African Americans, you're going to see there's a difference. Have you seen the estimated GFR? Are you aware of this? So this is not, and there's a Kotkoff-Gault formula. I could launch off to Mobius with my medical students for about an hour. I'll try to keep it down. The truth is, these are estimations, Steve. And if you have a persistently elevated BUN and or creatinine off supplemental creatine, you should go see a doctor, a nephrologist. A lot of men that have muscle mass, black or white men, you're going to have, a lot of men have creatinines of 1.3 to 1.5. I make an estimation clinically, do I refer that man to a nephrologist? This is why guys come to me. And every man we have to be careful. You can do a 24-hour urine analysis. We could look at a spot protein. I'm taking care of half a dozen men that have legitimate kidney disease. Looking at the beginnings of kidney disease, it's determined based on a basic metabolic profile. This is very, guys, this is very complicated stuff. That's why this has to be done only by a board-certified internist. It has to be done. You can't be a nurse, an APRN. Again, I'm going to get a lot of egg thrown in my face. I'm an arrogant guy. Too bad. And if I don't know, if I don't feel comfortable, that's why these men come to me. Then I get a consult, but I broker the consult for them. I talk to the doctor for them. And then we get renal ultrasonography. We get a 24-hour creatinine clearance. This is probably stuff you guys you're not aware of. And this is not rocket science, by the way. An elevated creatinine, for who? How elevated? Are you on creatine? Are you dehydrated? Are you watered? I mean, there's, and then muscle spillover. Muscle spillover doesn't go for the elevated creatinine. Maybe a little bit, but kind of a misnomer. Men that have elevated LFTs, let's jump into the LFTs, common. That can be, not hyperbilirubinemia. Not Gilbray's disease when you see a little bump in the total billy. This is the stuff that people, guys love bro science, but again, whatever you guys do for a living, you keep doing. Let a physician with years and years and years and thousands of hours of experience in hospitals and outside and be humble. To understand this, it's just not some slam dunk. You can't group and lump. You have to be careful. If you see a man with a creatinine of 1.5, That could be normal for him. There could be another man with a creatinine 1.5 that's the beginning of, he has impaired renal function. I see it all the time. That's why guys come to me, because I'm a son of a bitch. And because if I don't know something, I'm not sure. I know at this age, at this stage of my experience as a physician, I know when to refer And but I also know when not to waste someone's time.
So I agree with everything you said.
That's an incredible, complicated question. The best question of the night for the cerebral hemisphere is differentiating an elevated creatinine or BUN versus normal or not. That's the best question of the night. Because you know what? It's not even easy for me to do every day. And tomorrow morning, I got to look at hundreds of guys. You know, I have to look at, I have to put my game face on tomorrow morning and get ready to look at a lot of labs. I have to make decisions. I have to move and I have to make decisions. Who I'm going to refer to, is this normal? Is it not normal? And obviously most of my guys are on TRT now.
Wow, that was a lot of info. I agree with everything you're saying. The problem with blood work is that these values have to cover anything from an 18-year-old man to an 80-year-old man. And then also what people don't realize is that these values were established for bedridden patients. They weren't established for healthy individuals. So if you look at two people's values that are technically normal, but one's an 18-year-old guy and one's a bedridden 80-year-old man, even though both might be technically normal, they should be night and day different. So I agree with everything you said.
I'm not going to go into that too much. I'm not going to tear that apart. But when you're an internist and you're seeing people for general medical disease, you know, we all can understand, depending on someone who's young, who's old, bedridden, not bedridden, someone who's using other drugs, if they're using, forget drugs, if they're on statin drugs, we're going to see a little bump in the LFTs. Do we mind it? We might not mind it. And we're not being cocky. We're not being cowboys and want to hurt someone, but we know that it doesn't mean anything. So this is the clinical stuff I teach in the medical, in the program. You know, and some guys, I select, you know, different guys that come in through my program and they see my patients. And boy, man, these medical students and residents, their mouths are just bouncing. I didn't learn this stuff overnight. I started my residency in 2001. So, you know, in the first 3 years, I did internal medicine in the hospital in inner city in Hartford, Connecticut. And I saw, it was a ginormous hospital. And then towards the end, when I, about 2002 to 2005, excuse me, 2001, I was getting out of med school. 2002, 2005, 3 years. And towards the end, I started seeing steroid users in my clinic in the inner city. I had diabetes patients. I had absolute sweethearts. And then I had big, strong steroid users. And my preceptors were like, holy, this is great. They had no, we saw elevated BUNs, creatinines, LFTs, unbelievable red blood cells. I could talk about 1 hour on polycythemia. I'm going to do a video on that. There's a big doctor I'm going to interview. I won't say where or who he is yet, about polycythemia, red blood cells on steroids, testosterone. We don't even understand it. Should everyone be phlebotomized? The answer is no way. Are they going to have a stroke? Is it hypercoagulable? No. There's no data. None.
So Dr. Thomas O'Connor, for our listeners, are you currently accepting patients? If someone wanted you to, you know, if they wanted you to interpret their blood work, is that something you do? Are you currently accepting patients?
I am accepting patients.
How can people get a hold of you? What's the best way?
MetabolicDoc.com, AnabolicDoc.com. Start with everything starts off online. Everyone has to get blood work, either my blood work panel, or a lot of guys just, I offer my blood work panel online for free. Guys can get their own blood work, but I do, everyone starts off with a 1 hour consultation across the whole world. And you contact, I have people in the office. We have a nice staff here in Connecticut, in Florida. Everyone goes to get to me. They have to start off online and talk to my staff. And then everyone starts off with a 1 hour consultation. And then it grows. And then we see eye to eye. And then a lot of men don't want to come off steroids. And Steve, this is for you. So I take care of men on steroids. How do I do it ethically? And how do I keep a medical license? They do an hour consultation. It doesn't cost a lot of money, $395 or $495. I talk to them and I bleed for them. I talk to them and they tell me it's confidential. That's HIPAA. They tell me what they've done, what they're doing. They tell me how they feel and what their plans are. They ask me personal questions that mean something to them. They ask me what concerns them, why they're losing sleep and why they're worried. And then I answer their questions. And then if we decide to work together, they join the practice for 1 year.
And then where are your locations in person? You said Florida and Connecticut?
They come in, you do it all online.
Hartford? No. In the United States, I'm in Hartford, Connecticut, Bloomfield, Connecticut, which is just north of Hartford. And we have a beautiful new office as of 2 months ago in Fort Lauderdale, which I love, of course.
So you fly down to Fort Lauderdale certain times of the year to see the patients, or you have a staff?
No, I go once a month. We go down there for a few days. We see all the patients and we come home.
Cool. Okay.
A great life. And then for outside this country, I want to make this very clear. I have the greatest amount of growth in my practice right now, please, is not in America. I'm seeing more patients now with consultations that I do take care of them. It's all ethical. It's ethical. I work with their caregivers. I direct care right here from America, and I work with them. They Skype over, we talk, we get labs over, I tell them, I evaluate the labs, we talk, I hook them up with doctors. They have doctors that are excellent doctors. We find doctors all over the world. We have technology, we have labs, we have CT scans, echocardiograms. We have doctors all over the world from South America, Africa, Asia, Arabic region of the world, North America, Central America. I have patients all over. My biggest growth is not in North America. It's outside North America. So please, I want to help you. My only problem is I only speak English, and I do apologize for that. I speak a little Spanish, but I find that most of these men are so amazing that they speak English very well. And we do these, we do consultations, and I love to hear new people and to hear new stories. It's my lifeblood.
So there's the anabolic doc and the metabolicdoc.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'll have those in the show notes. So if you're worried about spelling or you don't speak English, like he just said, it'll be in the show notes. So you can just copy and paste it. Dr. Thomas O'Connor, we really appreciate you doing this interview. Keep fighting the good fight. You know, you're the 1% who's helping out the steroid users. So we really appreciate that. For your host, Trevor Kuritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for our special guest, Dr. Thomas O'Connor, also known as the Anabolic Doc. This has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening.